The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flowery.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Thanks for some of the feedback that's been coming in response to recent programs. If you have some comments or suggestions or requests, send them to td@kpcg.fm. Well, last month, the European Council of Foreign Relations published a paper titled The Road Back to European Power. The Road Back to European Power. Richard Palmer writes about this today at the Trumpet.com website. In his article, The Europe of the Bible Takes Shape. The Bible has a lot to say about what's happening in Europe. A lot of people don't care much about what's going on in Europe, certainly not in America. But the Bible has a lot to say. And the Europe that's taking shape today is prophesied. It's discussed in Bible prophecy. Notice what this document, this is sort of the centerpiece of Mr. Palmer's article. This document from the European Council of Foreign Relations says this about the United States. The current picture is one of continental drift as Americans and Europeans become decreasingly capable of or interested in working together effectively in an ever more contested world. Here are these two continents drifting farther and farther apart, leaving Europe to itself. These authors are not alone, the ones that put together this paper, in seeing the shocking breakdown of the United States and the breakdown of U.S.-European relations. Richard Palmer writes, it's a two-pronged push. Europe believes America is an unreliable ally on which it can no longer depend for its security. At the same time, America is actively and deliberately encouraging Europe to develop a strong military power independent of the USA. So here's the U.S. encouraging Europe to go it alone. Here's the U.S. We'll just run down the list. Here's the U.S. clearing the way in Iraq for Iran to take over. Here's the U.S. clearing the path for Iran to acquire a nuclear weapon. Here's the U.S. clearing the way for the European beast power to come to the fore. These are exciting times that we're living in. All of these fulfilled prophecies, that's what Mr. Palmer talks about at the start of his article. It's been laid out there for you if you followed this work. Now, I mean, going on a century. Going back to the conversion of Herbert Armstrong back in 1926, 1927. And how that for decades, the centerpiece of the many prophecies that he discussed, that he taught you about. Among them, the centerpiece was this one about the seventh and final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire. The paper that Richard Palmer quotes, this paper says, too often in recent decades, Europeans have been content to tag along behind the U.S. in international affairs. A new, more realistic transatlantic bargain will require a stronger European sense of Europe's own interests and identity. You put this together, of course, with all that's happening within Europe. The crisis in Greece. And now the migrant crisis, which we'll talk about here in just a second. And then these severing ties between the continent and the United States. It's just waiting for a strong man to come forward. It's just waiting for that man in Daniel 8. That God prophesies about. It's waiting for that man to step forward It's waiting for the union nations to downsize. It's waiting for that core of 10 groups, 10 kings, 10 nations. But you can see it. You can see its early formation here. If you're watching unto prayer, as the Bible says you should, watch and pray always, Jesus said. These are, in so many ways, they're terrifying times, but very exciting as well. Because we know that this is all a lead-in to the return of Jesus Christ. Why don't you request He Was Right? Beautiful booklet that we produced years ago that just goes right down the line of all these prophecies that Herbert Armstrong preached, that my father has since been preaching since Mr. Armstrong's death. It's all laid out there for you in that beautiful booklet, He Was Right. As I said, you can contact us at td@kpcg.fm and get your own copy. Study it. See what the Bible says. See what we've been saying. See how accurate the forecast has been. Richard Palmer also talks about that migrant crisis. You heard a bit about it at the top of the news. But here it's getting bad. I mean, these are now the headlines. As Greece falls to the later pages in the news cycle. Italy and Greece now, they're just being overwhelmed by refugees fleeing from the Middle East, fleeing from North Africa. Just last month, 107,000 migrants poured into the EU. And really, the resources there to support this inflow, they're already stretched thin. 107,000. That's up from 70,000 the month before. 340,000 migrants have arrived in Europe since January. It compares to 280,000 all of last year, and we've still got a little over 4 months left in the year. We've gone from 280,000 to 340 plus. Where will it be by the end of the year? I just want to reread what I covered with you yesterday. This is from Pat Buchanan. He talked about immigration, the issue of the century, in his column this week, the one that I quoted from yesterday. And just to give you a short quote from that, he says, these refugees, asylum seekers, and illegal immigrants are not going to stop coming to Europe, for they're being driven across the Med by wars. Notice this, wars in Libya, Syria, Iraq, Afghanistan, Yemen. They're being driven across by the horrific conditions in Eritrea, Ethiopia, Somalia, and Sudan. By the Islamist terrorism of the Mideast. And the abject poverty of the Sub-Sahara. Look at world conditions. Look at what's happening. Look at how it's impacting Europe. Look at how the illegal flow of immigration is impacting the United States. Buchanan says, according to the UN, Africa had 1.1 billion people in 2013, and it will double to 2.4 billion by 2050. How many of these billions dream of coming to Europe? When and why will they stop coming? How many can Europe absorb without going bankrupt and changing the continent forever? It says, does Europe have the toughness to seal its borders and send back the intruders? It doesn't yet. It doesn't yet. It's weak on border security, just like the United States. But you can expect it to clamp down, and soon, which is why we've got to be watching Germany. As you heard there at the top of the hour, the German government, I mean, it's dealing with its problem. This is now a bigger problem than the Greece crisis was. They've upped their forecast. to 750,000, perhaps 800,000 by the end of this year. Asylum seekers, migrants just pouring into Germany. Germany's about the size of Montana. How much can it sustain? How many can it take in? They've upped their forecast to about 800,000. Previous estimate was 450,000. It's just a huge influx of migrants, refugees. Many again, like Buchanan brings out, fleeing war and poverty, fleeing from terrorism. How much longer can the European Union cope with these kinds of numbers? How much longer will Germany put up with it? Already we've seen an upsurge in attacks against refugees and asylum seekers in Germany. The populace there is unsettled, upset, and in some cases reacting with anger and violence. It's become a bigger challenge for the EU, for Germany, than even the Greek debt crisis. As big as that was, well, I mean, this was just a few weeks ago when we were talking about the collapse of Greece. When we were talking about Germany conquering Greece. And now there's this crisis in the local. They had an interview with Angela Merkel where she called this a bigger challenge than Greece. The article says, asked about more than 200 arson attacks against homes for asylum seekers seen in Germany this year as the country faces a record influx of refugees, Merkel said, that is unworthy of our country. Merkel warned that waves of refugees would preoccupy Europe much, much more than the issue of Greece and the stability of the euro. It quotes her as saying, the issue of asylum could be the next major European project in which we show whether we are really able to take joint action. See, you put this together with that report that Richard Palmer talked about in his column today. Europe separating itself from America's influence, having to take on these problems just by themselves, needing leadership, desperately needing leadership. Needing a strong man, just as the Bible prophesies. This article says, with thousands of refugees sleeping in tents and authorities saying they are overwhelmed with applications, Merkel said the current situation was, quote, absolutely unsatisfactory. She called for the European Union to establish a list of safe countries of origin where citizens are not under threat of violence or persecution. I guess she's calling for sanctuary nations or sanctuary cities as they are in the U.S. We'll have to see how this goes over with the German populace. Already, as this article brings out, there have been 200 arson attacks this year against those seeking asylum in Germany. Well, over in America, as you know, it has its own immigration crisis, and it's bringing the nation down. The numbers there are worse than Europe. And there's no end in sight. The best that America can come up with is someone putting up a proposal and then it being just endlessly debated, back and forth and back and forth, even as nothing gets done. The Washington Free Beacon had a piece this week about a congressman sending a letter to the administration about this ongoing problem with releasing violent illegal immigrants back into U.S. towns. You heard about that case with Ms. Steinle a couple, 3 months ago. Well, that's not an isolated case, sadly. The Free Beacon piece says the Department of Homeland Security has been releasing illegal immigrants with violent criminal records back into local U.S. communities where they have often gone on to commit violent crimes against American citizens, according to new disclosures by a leading lawmaker and local law enforcement agencies. So we've been talking about this in recent weeks. Notice it says here, Representative Matt Salmon and law enforcement officials petitioned the Obama administration on Wednesday to end a policy that enables illegal immigrants with criminal records to be released back into the U.S. Here they are petitioning the administration to end a policy that enables illegal immigrants with criminal records to return right back into American society. Arizona law enforcement officials announced on Tuesday that three illegal aliens with violent criminal records had been released by DHS. Released by DHS and Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, back onto the streets where they went on to commit crimes including kidnapping and murdering an infant. The ongoing release of criminals from countries such as Iraq, Sudan, and Russia prompted Salmon to petition DHS to, quote, stop freeing violent criminals who are in our country illegally. He sent that to the administration. The article here concludes, at least three illegal aliens released by DHS in recent weeks have been charged with serious crimes, including the beating of a seven-week-old baby, an immolation of a person, according to local law enforcement and Salmon. And so the violence continues because of policies of this administration. Now, you contrast that with this story. This appeared in the New York Times print edition just today, this morning. This piece that's titled Justice Department Presses Civil Rights Agenda in Local Courts. So here's the administration preoccupied with, well, I'll just let the article speak for itself. It says the federal government has typically waded into local court cases only when the outcome directly affected a federal interest, such as national security or diplomacy. Okay, that's the way it used to be. They'd only meddle in local affairs when it had to do with national security or diplomacy, something big, in other words. Recently, however, this is the New York Times. Recently, however, the Justice Department has filed statements of interest in cases involving legal aid in New York, transgender students in Michigan, juvenile prisoners in solitary detention in California, and people who take videos of police officers in Baltimore. The government has weighed in on employment discrimination claims brought by transgender plaintiffs and a lawsuit over the right of blind people with service dogs to be able to use Uber, a car-sharing service. This is what the government's focused on. This is what the administration is concerned with. These stories. It reminds me of what we covered yesterday. All those headlines from BBC. It says a lot about where we are today as a nation. It says a lot about America today. Look at the issues this administration really considers important. The issues this administration won't let go. And then the ones that it completely ignores, like the fact that there are policies in place that enable illegal immigrants with criminal records to roam the streets in America. This New York Times piece, it quotes the former Attorney General, "The Justice Department is sending a clear message that we will not accept criminal justice procedures that have discriminatory effects," former Attorney General Eric Holder said in February after filing documents in a case involving high court bonds in Alabama. "We will not hesitate to fight institutionalized injustice wherever it is found." I mean, this is a priority. This is a top priority. Loretta Lynch, who became Attorney General in April, has continued the initiative unabated. It says, finally, civil rights groups have applauded the move and in turn flooded the Justice Department with requests for government intervention in their cases. So, in other words, it's just going to get worse. They're just going to meddle in more and more local matters that fit in with its agenda. Civil rights groups have applauded the move and in turn flooded the Justice Department with requests for government intervention in their cases. Well, as I said, it says a lot about the state of America today. When you just look at the issues, the items discussed in the news, the items on the to-do list when it comes to the administration or the Justice Department, and then the things at the same time that are just ignored. Well, yesterday, the big breaking story had to do with Iran and the fact that we learn now that Iran is the one that's going to inspect its nuclear site. The site that most commentators accuse them of using to develop nuclear weapons, nuclear arms. And who is it, according to this secret side deal between Iran and the IAEA, who is it that gets in there for unprecedented inspection access? Iranian officials. Iranian officials, that's who. That's what the Associated Press was reporting yesterday. I just want to play for you what Senator Kerry, or former senator, he's the Secretary of State now, testified last month before Congress regarding these secret side deals that the IAEA made with Iran.
Mr. Chairman, final question. I heard Senator Reshu, I don't know whether that's true or not, Parchin. You know, the whole purpose of understanding the military dimensions of what happened in Parchin is not for Iranians to declare culpability, but in fact to understand how far they got along in their weaponization efforts. General Hayden, who was the CIA director, said we have estimates, but they're just that. Is it true that the Iranians are going to be able to take the sample, as Senator Rich said? Because chain of custody means nothing if at the very beginning what you're given is chosen and derived by the perpetrator.
Well, as you know, Senator, that is a classified component of this. It's supposed to be discussed in a classified session. We're perfectly prepared to fully brief you in classified session with respect to what will happen. Secretary Moniz has had his team red team that effort, and he has made some additional add-ons to where we are. But it's part of a confidential agreement between the IAEA and Iran as to how they do that. The IAEA has said that they are satisfied that they will be able to do this in a way that does not compromise their needs and that adequately gets the answers that they need. We've been briefed on it. We're happy to brief you.
My time is up, but if that is true,
I'd like Secretary
if that is true, that would be the equivalent of the fox guarding the chicken coop.
That's, Senator, I'm not confirming how it's happening. I'm simply saying to you that we are confident the IAEA has the ability to be able to get the answers that they need, and Secretary Moniz can speak quickly to that for a moment if he may.
That's Secretary of State John Kerry scolding Senator Bob Menendez for bringing it up in a public session when it should have been reserved for a classified session. And now that it's made public, you can see why they wanted it to be kept secret. You can see why Iran wants it to be kept secret. There was this story just this week, August 18th. Again, the Washington Free Beacon. Iran threatened harm to top nuke inspector to prevent disclosure of secret deal. Just one snippet from this article. Iranian leaders prevented a top IAEA agency official from disclosing to U.S. officials the nature of secret side deals with the Islamic Republic by threatening harm to him. by threatening harm to him. And in that clip I just played for you, you can certainly hear the tone of the Secretary of State, who wasn't happy that Senator Menendez let the cat out of the bag back during that that hearing. Senator Menendez, by the way, he's a Democrat. He announced just the other day his opposition to the Iran nuclear agreement. Now, many analysts still think it's probably going to pass through Congress. We'll have to wait and see. But you can see why there are some Democrats that are standing against it. It is, as Menendez said there, it's like having the fox guard the chicken coop. That's the secret side deal. That's the side deal that the President of the United States farmed out. That's not even part of the nuclear agreement. It's separate and apart from what the U.S. negotiated. It's between the IAEA and Iran. And if that Free Beacon piece is true, now you have Iranian officials threatening IAEA representatives to keep their mouths shut. This AP story from yesterday about the news that Iran was going to inspect itself, basically. It says the newly disclosed side agreement for an investigation of the Parchin nuclear site by the UN's International Atomic Energy Agency is linked to persistent allegations that Iran has worked on atomic weapons. I mean, this happens to be the site that's the most sensitive. And all we've been hearing is that inspectors will have unprecedented access. But it changes everything, does it not? If those inspectors are Iranian. It says that that investigation is part of the overarching nuclear limits deal. Evidence of the inspections concessions is sure to increase pressure from U.S. congressional opponents before a Senate vote of disapproval on the overall agreement in early September. If the resolution passes and President Barack Obama vetoes it, opponents would need a two-thirds majority to override it. And so we'll wait and see what happens there. The White House has since responded to the news yesterday that this is no big deal, basically, that we still have confidence in the agreement. Nancy Pelosi said such the same. The White House National Security Council spokesman, Ned Price, he said yesterday that he was confident in the agency's technical plans for investigating the possible military dimensions of Iran's former program. He has full confidence in the IAEA. He says that organization has separately developed the most robust inspection regime ever peacefully negotiated. And the inspectors are the Iranians, the foxes. The fox is in charge of the chicken coop. Here's a soundbite from John Kirby yesterday, I believe, too, from the U.S. State Department, the spokesman.
As we've said before, including in classified briefings for both chambers of Congress, we're confident in the agency's technical plans for investigating the possible military dimensions of Iran's former program, issues that in some cases date back more than a decade. Just as importantly, the IAEA is comfortable with arrangements which are unique to the agency's investigation of Iran's historical activities. When it comes to monitoring Iran's behavior going forward, the IAEA has separately developed the most robust inspection regime ever peacefully negotiated to ensure Iran's current program.
It's as if, really, that Iran can do no wrong. They can scrub the site down. They can threaten UN inspectors. They can send in their own inspectors. And you have the same talking points coming from the administration. It's shocking, really. There's a few sounding the alarm in Washington. Not nearly enough, though. This from the Free Beacon the other day, too. Just continuing with this same theme, a senior Iranian official declared on Monday that international nuclear inspectors would only be permitted into the country once they receive approval from the Islamic Republic, putting another roadblock between the IAEA and Iran's contested nuclear sites. So the ones that do come in from the outside, they have to require approval from Iran's intelligence agency. And then this article says Iran has already stated that no American inspector would be permitted into the country under the deal. So no Americans. UN reps have to be approved from Iran's intelligence agency. But with some sites, like Parchin, that's reserved just for Iranian inspectors. And you get in there and foul that up, you UN inspectors, we threaten you. We threaten you with violence. That's what's going on in Iran. And meanwhile, of course, that's not the only thing happening in the world, as we've been discussing. Vladimir Putin's on the march in Ukraine, stepping up hostilities while no one looks. The Wall Street Journal from the other day, Russian proxies in occupied eastern Ukraine shelled Ukrainian government positions over the weekend and on Monday. The artillery barrage killed two civilians and wounded several others in Sartana near the Sea of Azov. It's one of the larger scale escalations of the conflict since a winter ceasefire. It goes on to quote a representative or a general representing Ukraine, saying that this is just ongoing and it's intensifying. It's nonstop attacks coming from Russia, coming from Putin's forces. And then one final piece here. This is from the Times of Israel, also just the other day. It says, Iran says it will sign a deal for Russian air defense system next week. Next week, it's going to sign this deal that will deliver an upgraded S-300 system sometime in the middle of next year. The article says Russia will finalize a deal to send an advanced air defense system to Iran next week, Tehran's defense minister said Tuesday, as the country shore up ties in the wake of the historic nuclear deal. It's just opening everything up for Iran. This historic deal. The S-300 is an advanced system for intercepting fighter jets and is intended to protect sensitive ground facilities. It's capable of engaging several jets at the same time and is considered one of the most advanced systems of its kind in the world. Israel sees the system as one of the hardest obstacles to overcome should it seek to attack Iran's nuclear installations. Small wonder that Israel has voiced such strong opposition to the nuclear deal. Well, with this system in place in 2016, it's just going to be that much more difficult to ever take out Iran's nuclear installations. As I say, you put all these prophecies together, going back to what Richard Palmer wrote about at the Trumpet.com today, the featured story. It really is exciting when you see the King of the South emerging, when you see the scene being set for the Daniel 8 man to appear in Europe, the emergence of that European power. And you see the kings of the East. You see Vladimir Putin on the march. You see China growing its military presence. And then you see the nations of America and Britain in rapid decline. All of it's talked about in Bible prophecy. All of it's talked about in He Was Right, our booklet. Send us a request and we'll give you a hard copy of that for free. Just write us at td@kpcg.com. KPCG.FM. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show on KPCG 101.3 on the FM dial in Edmond, Oklahoma. And the live stream is available at KPCG.FM. We'll be right back.
From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
I just want to begin this segment. It looks like it'll be a fairly short segment, given the time right now. But with one more piece from the Times of London, I think this will lead into the short study that I wanted to get into today before we conclude. This is about children in England here being among the unhappiest in the world. It says here, bullying and relentless pressure to look good are conspiring to make English children feel miserable. English children, even worse than many of the surrounding nations, even than third world nations. All this prosperity in Britain, all of this physical abundance, all these blessings on the one hand, and yet so little happiness. Quite a lot of unhappiness, in fact. It says, children in England were also particularly dissatisfied with their appearance, with girls most unhappy with how they looked. With the exception of South Korea, English girls ranked bottom in terms of happiness with their bodies and appearance compared with girls in every other country surveyed. And then I want you to note just how this piece concludes. It says, the popularity of social media among British children is thought to be exacerbating problems with body image as children and teenagers compare themselves with perfect images, quote unquote, perfect images that they see online and feel that they do not measure up. And so I'm sure it's similar in the United States when you look at the problems with depression and suicide and children that turn to violence or fornication in rebellion against authorities, their parents. And so many of these kids have every imaginable gadget, but all too often these many devices work against them and they end up making them miserable and unhappy. On the one hand, these modern devices make it seem like that we're a very progressive society, an advanced society. You look at all the things that we as a civilization have produced. Awe-inspiring inventions. Incredible labor-saving devices. Luxuries. Luxuries that our grandparents couldn't have dreamed of. Look at some of the conveniences, how fast you can communicate with one another. Just this very broadcast, live from Edstone, England, streaming through the internet, through to our headquarters facility in Edmond, going over the air live in Edmond, Oklahoma. And then the stream available to anyone around the world who has internet access. That's awesome technology. Look at the advanced technology in the world of radio or television or the internet. And yet, like this article brings out in the Times, look at how unhappy so many of our children are. Look at how much misery and suffering there is in the world today, just like Pat Buchanan brought out in that column. With all these wars across nations in the Middle East, all the horrific conditions in sub-Sahara Africa, all the Islamist terrorism going on in the Middle East and beyond, the expanding populations in these war-torn areas, in these third world nations where there's so much poverty and illiteracy? And you can hardly fault families, entire families, for risking their lives to sail across the Mediterranean, looking for a better life. Well, that's the world that we live in today. And yet another world is coming, a new world is coming. And in fact, that world, that new world, God's world, has already started on these two campuses I just mentioned. If you look at what this college, Armstrong College, what it specializes in, it's exactly what's left out in every other college or university around the world, where we bring young people in from all over the world. It's not a large student body. It's a small group. But they come from many different nations. And they're brought into Armstrong College and taught, first and foremost, how to develop righteous character. How to develop godly character. Character development in every other school is virtually ignored. Let me read to you what Herbert Armstrong said. This is back when he was establishing Ambassador College. He said, "There can be no well-balanced, broadening, and worthwhile education where the true values have been obscured from view, where character building is lost and discarded, where character building is a lost and discarded art, and minds are filled with dead knowledge and false materialism." He says the development of the man himself, his character, right sense of values, knowledge of the real purpose of life, and the laws that govern happiness, peace, and abundant well-being is neglected. Modern education commits the crime of developing the machine while failing to develop the man. Isn't that true? Do you think that's an overstatement? Do you think he's exaggerating? Modern education commits the crime. It is a crime. It's criminal. With the whole focus going on the development of the machine. And meanwhile, we fail to develop the man. A couple of weeks ago, we talked about that tweet that went out from the White House about rethinking discipline because of all the minority students that are suspended or expelled from school. And so the solution for many educators today is to remove discipline. What little discipline is even left in schools? Again, the focus is not on character or character development. The focus is on removing or taking away the last few restraints that are there in place. Mr. Armstrong said at Ambassador College, this is the college he raised up. We've since raised up Armstrong College, modeled after what he established through Ambassador. He says at Ambassador College, students find the true values. They learn the real purpose of human life. Life takes on true meaning. Emphasis is upon character building. Students acquire a well-rounded, broadening, balanced education. There's not only mind development, but also that of personality, true culture, poise, and emotional maturity. That's the way it was at Ambassador College, and that's the way it is at our AC. Armstrong College is a character-building institution. And in this institution, God is establishing a lifestyle, an environment that's uplifting and wholesome, that's productive and fruitful, that really gives hope to this dying world, that sets an example before this world. Not that any of us are perfect. But this is God's society, starting in the smallest of ways. And it grows, and it grows, and it grows. That's what it did under the direction of Herbert Armstrong for the length of his ministry, right up until his death in January of 1986. And that's the way it's been these past 25 years. For this little church, the one that sponsors this station, KPCG, and the church behind Armstrong College, which was established in 2001 and is now, as of yesterday, entering into its 15th year of existence with students that, as I say, come in from all over the world that have then gone out to various projects like in Jerusalem with the seasons of excavation that we've had over there several years in a row. And now those few that have come to Edstone to support the work here in the UK, to support its rapid expansion. It's going to continue to grow right on into the world tomorrow, the wonderful world tomorrow. That's the significance of what we see established here in the UK and in Edmond, not just with the colleges, but with the academy as well. The academy that we have there, the brick and mortar schools in Edmond, and then, of course, all of the, I forget the number now, perhaps over 100 that are involved with the academy instruction online, young people being taught the missing dimension in knowledge, young people being taught that in addition to learning how to make a living, the most important thing to learn is how to live, building character. AC and IA both are character building institutions. Well, we'll have to cut it off there and perhaps pick up with this theme at a later time. We have been spending a fair bit of time this week on this subject of education, contrasting God's system with the system we see in this world. What a contrast it is. We're talking about it more, I suppose, because it is the beginning of a new semester for us, those of us involved with Armstrong College and with Imperial Academy. But it's worth bringing up from time to time, because salvation, I mean, this process of God reproducing himself, it's a process of education. Mr. Armstrong used to say salvation is education. That's why we place such an emphasis on it today, because what God establishes here, what he is working to establish here, is what he will soon take and spread over all the earth. Once again, you're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Thank you again, as I said at the start, for some of the feedback that we've been getting of late with these mini programs, quite a few now that we've been putting together and making available at our SoundCloud page, at the TuneIn app, of course, on our website, thetrumpet.com. Send us your feedback, your requests, your comments on the program or any of the other programs. Send that to td@kpcg.fm. We certainly appreciate what feedback you've given us already. Thank you again for listening to us, and we'll see you again one more time this week, tomorrow morning.